This season, let your shoes do the talking. Designer Shoe Warehouse is packed with fresh styles that speak to your whole vibe without saying a word. From cool sneakers that look good with everything to easy sandals you'll want to wear on repeat, DSW has you covered. Find a shoe for every you from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, New Balance, and more. Head to your DSW store or visit DSW.com today.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Welcome into Sports Daily. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Gester, glad to be here with you. Max Power producing for us as we get you ready for a shortened week. We had the holiday there yesterday. Hope everybody was able to enjoy some family time, some time away from work as we continue to soak up the rain here. Much needed rain, I know. Look, everybody wanted to be outside and doing all their thing yesterday. We did too, but we need this rain, so we're happy to have it. Glad to have you with us over the air here, 97.5 FM, 1240 AM. You can call us that way at 869-1240. Thanks also for watching us on our video streams, which you'll find on 12 News Connected, on Facebook, on YouTube, on X. You can leave us messages there that we can put right up here over the screen if you're watching one of those video streams. And you can listen to us, of course, anytime on the Odyssey app. You can podcast us out, whatever you want to do. If you're listening to us that way and you want to chime in, you can leave us voice messages with the little microphone app on there. A lot to get to today. We got to make up some ground here on the long weekend. Tommy, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Good Memorial Day weekend. I know, obviously, the weather was not ideal for most folks in their outdoor plans. I did have this thought, though, that really for a holiday, it's not really a premier sports weekend. I know the Indianapolis 500 happened this weekend, but, you know, in a weekend where, like, yesterday the weather was not good for most of the day, I found myself thinking it'd be nice if there was, like, you know, some sort of premier sports event that happened. And I know we've got NBA finals and all of that, but somebody should probably take hold of the Memorial Day holiday and turn it into like a big sports weekend for situations like what we had this weekend.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what else you'd do with it. It would be there, but it's not like,
I mean, it's the one main weekend where there's really, other than the Indy 500 and you're in the middle of the NBA playoffs, it's not like there's, you know, a whole lot else going on.
Yeah, I guess for the guaranteed holiday weekends, I was going to say July 4th is not a big sports, but that doesn't always happen on a weekend anyway. I'd have to look. You're right on that. I don't know.
I mean, flipping the channels yesterday as the rain's coming down. I'm like, man, it'd be great if we had something going on. But you know,
Yeah, because if you turn the Royals on, that one got away quickly. It was one of those situations where they got down early and they stood no chance. Right? You just feel like the game's over. That happened on Sunday when they got down 1-0. It was like, well, they're not going to come. I mean, it's a problem here with the Royals. We're going to have Jalen Thompson in. He was traveling Friday, so we missed his regular visit. So we're going to get him in early and late this week. The Royals certainly on the brain. So he'll be in later this hour. We'll also have our Chiefs insider, Felix Johnson, is going to be by in the second hour to talk anything we're missing really in the NFL? What's out there? Should we start to now evaluate the Chiefs? We'll do some of that. I know he's doing that in some of his writing work. So we'll have all that for you today. It'll be a good day on the show. We'll give away some HTO today as well. Thanks to Prairie Fire Coffee for getting us revved up here on a now Tuesday morning to start the week. It is a little, you know, the rain outside. We're going on about 4 days, no sunshine here. Like that, you know, it makes you a little sleepy. I get it. I hear you. So appreciate you, Prairie Fire, for keeping us fueled up. There was news this weekend for K-State. P.J. Haggerty is Wildcat. I got to tell you, look, I didn't see that one coming, Tommy. I missed the headline, but I didn't know they were still in the market for a player of his stature, because we know he was wanting to be highly compensated through the NIL space. And I assume he was, but Haggerty is now a Cat. So we'll dig into that a little bit. I thought that was interesting. And I wonder what KU fans think about all these moves K-State's making right now.
The first thing I thought about was the NIL bank for Kansas State must be fairly full.
Back to where it was.
Because I can only imagine the amount of money that PJ Haggerty was garnering on the open market. And then, of course, they've already signed the overseas kid that I know they wrote a pretty decent NIL check to get him as well. So now you've got two players that are probably around the Coleman Hawkins range. And, you know, they paid Coleman Hawkins quite a bit of money. And now you've got two guys that are probably getting that kind of money, maybe more. And so it makes me think that the funding is clearly there for Kansas State to try to rebuild their team.
Yeah, it is. It stayed there because it was there last year. They didn't get the right guys, but the funding was certainly there. We have the NBA Finals. Oklahoma City takes a commanding lead there. We might get into that a little bit today. Kind of a boring ending to a game. And I tell you, I watched that game last night. It was just like foul, 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 right? No attempts. I was like, man, you know what this league could use? The Elam ending. I've been such an advocate. I believe it to the deepest parts of my soul. Like, you've got that high profile game last night. And it's just everybody's trying to foul as hard as they can to get to the line to avoid a throw. I'm like, this is not the way this should be done. Like,
never going to happen. I don't disagree with you, but it'll never happen.
No, you're right. It'll never happen, but it should. But it should. Think about that game last night, and they're racing to a number. Be incredible. And you wouldn't have that situation. The Big 12 is maybe a little spicy about the talkings and the rumblings, Big 12 and the ACC, about how a new playoff format could look at 16 teams. We're having things leaked out of those meetings, so we can dig into that as well. That should be pretty interesting. And we'll tell you what's going on there with the Big 10 and the SEC kind of flexing, as we all knew they would. But is it realistic for the Big 12 and the ACC to push back on that? We'll dig in. We'll tell you what we're talking about. It has to do with college football playoff. That's also going on there. But, you know, look, we're going to spend some time with the Royals today, Tommy, and they're struggling right now. Losers of four of their last five series. They've lost four of their last five series here, and the schedule does not get easier. It gets more difficult as you go into June. You've got all kinds of things happening right now with that franchise. You've got Jack Caglione, who's hit, and I didn't see what he did yesterday, but he had hit five home runs in four games going into yesterday. They sent down Kevin Biggio. They brought up another utility guy. There's a lot going into Cags' decision. We'll get Jalen Thompson's take on that. He was right, by the way. I texted him immediately. I was like, did they send down Biggio to call up Cags? He said, no, probably not yet. They're going to call up, you know, a different player, and Cag's probably been a little bit. So he's been on that, but we'll get the take. Is that at some point, Tommy, the team's not going to be able to justify this anymore. Like, this is all very likely service time driven and all of these things, but it's like, you need some help up at the big league level. And this dude could not be any more on fire down there.
Yeah. I mean, he is, he's hit really, really well in a few games in AAA. I think one thing that, I didn't realize was that they were playing, I think it was Salt Lake City, And they've got the worst pitching staff in AAA baseball. Salt Lake City does. I've seen some people say Caglione was probably facing actually better pitching in AA leading up to this point than a small sample size in AAA against Salt Lake City. So he's got, you know, his first few home games in Omaha coming up this week. And, you know, we'll see how things go with him. But he certainly is on a heater right now.
That's one of the reasons I kind of like staying down in AA. It's not like there are places like that, there are leagues like that where the offense is more prone to go. Now, I don't know enough about it to say, oh, they should leave him down in AA. But I'm, you know, that's I thought he would be a skip AAA guy. But when the AAA team is literally down the street from you, I suppose that makes a little more sense. We'll get into all that with Jalen Thompson. Let's touch on this Big 12 story when we come back, and then we'll get Jalen Thompson's take on the Royals. So, college football playoffs coming. Could it be heavily weighted to the two big leagues? We'll talk about that and what can be done when we return on Sports Day.
This season, let your shoes do the talking. Designer Shoe Warehouse is packed with fresh styles that speak to your whole vibe, without saying a word. From cool sneakers that look good with everything, to easy sandals you'll want to wear on repeat, ESW has you covered. Find a shoe for every you, from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, New Balance, and more. Head to your DSW store or visit DSW.com today.
Keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
Time to get back to the sports talk.
All right, let's do this thing. Go!
Sports Daily is on KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster here with you on a Tuesday, getting you ready for your week. We'll see if I can make it through this entire show without calling it a Monday. It does feel like a Monday, but of course we had a holiday week in there. If you want to win some HTO, let's do that right now. You can win a free iced tea, more than 26 flavors to choose from, East or West Wichita or in Derby. You can do that right now by giving us a text. You can text the keyword tea, T-E-A, to 20357. That's tea, 20357. You can enter once per day, message and data rates apply. Good luck, everybody. We come back in. Let's talk a little college football. I don't know if you saw this headline over the weekend, but what's happening right now is they're about to change the format of the college football playoff. We won't stick with the current format, which we saw for the first time last year, for very much longer. It sure seems likely that we are headed to a 16-team playoff, which was the most predictable thing of all time when we saw that was coming. Been saying it for years and years and years. you know, when we talked about getting away from four, was that this thing is probably ultimately going to 16. They started with 12. 12, I think, was fine last year. I had no problem with 12. But eventually, you're going to get to 16. And I don't necessarily think they're just going to keep expanding forever. But at some point, why would you want less playoffs, right? Like, why would you want less of that? So this is likely where it's headed. Now, how you get there is what seems to be, according to reports, a hotly debated thing amongst college power players. And that is that the Big Ten and the SEC are reportedly secretly meeting on their own about a 4-4-2-2-1 format, which would mean that the Big Ten and the SEC get four automatic qualifiers each. The ACC and Big 12 would get two. You get then your, you know, group of six highest ranked team like you had with Boise State last year, and then you'd get three other at-large teams. The other format that I think that according to CBS Sports, the ACC and Big 12 prefer is the same five AQs you saw last year and then 11 at-large teams. And you take just the next 11 teams. You understand why the Big 12 and the ACC want that. History, I think, is honestly on the side of the Big 10 and the SEC here. The Big 10 and the SEC apparently want to get this to where they can do like a what they do is a play-in. So, and this is all in a CBS Sports article this morning, but you'd have, essentially, they'd have their conference championship game, Tommy. They'd send those two teams in, and then they would play two other, which is interesting to see this, because this is what I told you they should do in the Big 12 last week. I didn't know this was actually being considered. So then they'll take two other play-in games. They'll take the next four teams, and the two winners of those two playoff teams would become the two next automatic qualifiers. I think that's a fantastic idea, by the way. I think it adds to the regular season. I think you can get rid of some fluff at the beginning or play fewer, you know, regular season, whatever you got to do. But I love the idea of play-in type formats. I think we'd have a large appetite for that as viewers, even if we weren't fans of that conference. I'm far more likely to watch that game if I know it's to get in. So that's what's being thrown out there. We're going to get to a point where they vote on this at some point, I think, or they decide this here very soon, very soon. I don't know that I got to have more time with this and really think about it, but I'm not sure I even hate Tommy 4-4-2-2-1. Last year, that was, you know, it wasn't dominating. The SEC would have lost teams almost, unless you call them automatic qualifiers, because what you had was like the Big 12 would have been a winner in that scenario, Tommy. They only had one team in the top 16. They would have only had one team anyway. If you had two automatic qualifiers, well, now you're looking at, you'd have been in a better situation. And I'll bet you if we went back in time, there would be years this would help the ACC and the Big 12. Now, not every year. Maybe there's a year they have three in there. But how often does the Big 12 have three teams in the top 16 of a CFP ranking? It doesn't seem like it'd be very often. I don't know that this is that big a deal.
I mean, I think the biggest thing about it is that it is the SEC and the Big Ten absolutely throwing their weight around. I mean, this is a this is a power play for sure from both of those conferences. And, you know, I think that especially the SEC, they recognize that they hold the cards and that, you know, they've got the power to be able to sort of dictate the way that they want the future of this college football playoff to look. And the alternative, if their if their demands aren't met along with the Big Ten, if their demands aren't met, they could easily threaten to walk away. And I think that the college football playoff absolutely, without a doubt, needs them more than they need the college football playoff. And so, you know, you could easily, and I'm not, this is not the right thing to do, so I'm not advocating for this, but the SEC and the Big Ten could absolutely say, look, if our demands aren't met and if we don't get exactly the way, you know, this to be laid out the way that we want it to, we'll just go do our own championship.
Yeah.
And you know what? People would watch it. People would watch it, and it would ultimately dilute any kind of other championship, and it, you know, would make it, there would be this you know, divide and all the friction and tension and all of that, that would absolutely live. And then there would be this, you know, whole debate about who's the real national champion. If you've got the college football playoff and then you've got whatever the SEC and the Big Ten do, that's not what anybody wants. I don't think the SEC wants that necessarily, but they're in a position to be able to throw their weight around a little bit and say, if we don't get this format exactly the way that we want it, and we're the two conferences that hold all the power, and we've got the schools that are going to be, you know, largely represented in this year in and year out, then we'll just walk away and we'll take our ball and go home and we'll do our own thing. And so that's what I think the CFP and the ACC and the Big 12 have to recognize, and they have to understand that, yeah, they may not want this to be the format long term, and I totally get it and I understand why. But you, unfortunately, you may have to just grin and bear it and understand that this is the way, you know, to keep college football intact long term, is to have the format the way the SEC and the Big Ten would like it to be.
Yeah, I think there was a threat of that at one time. I don't think they even want that now. I think that they're.
I don't think they want it, but I certainly think they'll use it as a bargaining chip if they have to.
Yeah. But I don't even think they have to. Like they all know. I think now more than ever, like they all need each other to drive up the overall interest, because they're all trying to make as much money as they can. Right. At the end of the day, with a revenue share and all the money that's been paid, like all of, and this is why they want to do this, right? So they can create these other high revenue games.
You may be right, but did you hear, you may be right, but did you hear Greg Sankey talk over the weekend? I mean, some of the words that he was using and he was very much like kind of defiant and like, I'm not going to let anybody lecture me and lecture our conference on what's good for our conference and what is not good for our conference, and you know, and taking shots at these other conferences. Like it's not, I don't think it's all like warm and fuzzy right now. And I'm not sure that it will be moving forward. And I think that, again, Greg Sankey has become kind of the face of this with the SEC. And I think he's embracing kind of being the top dog in all of this and being like, look, like you guys can complain, you guys can, you know, be upset about all of this, but at the end of the day, we're going to do what's best for the two top conferences in the country, and that's just the way it's going to be.
Yeah, his quote is, we didn't need 12. If we stayed at 4, we would have had half of the 4 last year. I don't need lectures from the others about the good of the game. I don't lecture others about the good of the game and coordinate press releases about the good of the game.
Yeah, it's not warm and fuzzy.
No, it's not, and they're going to try to play their hand here, but I think we're far beyond them overplaying their hand so much that they break off. I don't know how this ultimately gets negotiated or bargained out, but if everybody needs more money, and they do right now, they know that the path to more money is the path that they're on now, not some alternative path where they don't have enough viewers to justify the TV deals they're trying to get signed. So yeah, it's going to be rocky to get there.
I mean, do you think
they clearly don't agree on this?
Do you think that, let's just say, hypothetically speaking, that the SEC and the Big Ten, let's say they break off. I don't think it's going to happen, but let's say they break off and they're like, you know what? We're not even going to do this anymore. We're just going to take our ball and go home and do our own thing. I absolutely think that even if they did that, the TV viewership would support them doing it. Like, I think that's not a concern. I don't think that's a concern for the SEC and the Big Ten. I absolutely think, because they have the premier schools in the country, that they would be able to drive revenue through viewership on their own thing that they do. Now, it's not going to be as much as the collective whole if you've got the CFP with everybody, but I do think, I mean, I absolutely believe that networks like ESPN and Fox would follow the SEC and the Big Ten to televise whatever separate kind of tournament or championship game that they want to do. The networks would follow that and the revenue would be there. And the SEC and the Big Ten know that. Is it the right thing to do overall? Absolutely not. But they can throw that weight around that the networks, I think, would absolutely follow them.
Well, yeah, they're going to have the network, but not for as valuable as a product. Over time, that product would get devalued. And this is just my opinion, and I've said this for forever. I think the greatest danger of the sport is to regionalize it further, because I'm telling you right now, we would not care about what's happening in the SEC in this part of the country if they weren't playing for the same thing we were. We wouldn't. We would be watching the teams we care about play for something else. And so you'd be fracturing the total audience even more than it is, and you would lose interest in the sport as a collective whole. I believe that 100%. Now, in the first couple of years, would it be like a mad dash to get those? Sure, it would. And then over time, as people see, like, man, the sport's never been less popular. Fewer people are watching these championship games. Fewer people are watching these regular season games. Your product gets devalued. Right now, we might have interest in watching a Saturday afternoon, more interest than just like we're diehard football fans, we'll watch anything. I get that part of it. But for the general public, there are, if K-State's in the mix of an essential wild card spot, there are more likely to be K-State fans or people in this region watching what's happening over there because it impacts their team. If that's not the case, again, my opinion, I think it would be devastating to the sport. And I think that they know that. And I don't think anybody has to get to that point. They've got that power here, and they should have the power. Again, just look at last year. Two automatic qualifiers for the Big 12, in my opinion, is not a bad deal. Like, I don't now, if you have further expansion here and whatever happens with the ACC, they may have to reevaluate this thing, in which they'd have to anyway. But you're guaranteeing me right now that two Big 12 teams get in every year? I don't think that's a bad deal for the Big 12. Go back and I just did. I just did during the break and while we're talking. If you go back historically in the CFP and look at where the Big 12 would have ended up in this, and you also consider that they don't have Texas or Oklahoma anymore, there are a lot of years one would be the max, if that. Like, it's just not, like, you got to be careful here not to poke that bear. To me, like, you have to, and I get it. And I'm not saying Brett Yormark should come out and be like, oh, we should do whatever they say. No, he shouldn't do that. He should bargain for his league and do whatever he thinks is best for his league, for sure. I don't think it's going to get to some massive point of contention. I think everybody's just, you know, fluffing their feathers up and strutting around a little bit here. But two automatic qualifiers for the Big 12 is not a bad deal. History tells us that it's not. There are a lot of years they wouldn't have two out of the top 16. So I don't think this is going to get that contentious.
I mean, going
if
back to
SEC
your
SEC and the Big Ten want to say four only, I was afraid they would do like six.
Yeah, going back to your argument about how if there isn't that representation, that the general public in this part of the country isn't going to care about it. I don't know. I mean, I know I'm a college football junkie, but at the same time, the only Big 12 team that was even represented in the bracket last year was Arizona State in their first year in the conference. They were bounced after one game, and I still watched basically every game.
Sure, you did.
But
would you have if it was up against a Big 12 and ACC tournament and Kansas was playing in it? Would you watch Georgia, Tennessee over Kansas, SMU?
I don't know. I mean, I if they're directly opposite of each other at the same exact time. Because I think that there's probably room to watch both if and when that happens. I don't know. I don't think it's going to get to that point. So I think it's a moot point, and I do agree with you. I think that there's just kind of jockeying for position.
I think there was a threat of that about 3 or 4 years
ago. I think that what we're seeing is a measuring contest of sorts going on now.
And we should be.
And I think that Greg Sankey is showing that he's going to win that measuring contest, you know, as it's happening for sure. But I think at the end of the day, Brett Yormark has done a phenomenal job with the Big 12, right? Like he has kept the Big 12 in the mix. He's kept the Big 12 relevant more so than it probably would have been without him. But at the same time, I think he's got to recognize, all right, you can lobby for your conference and that's what your job is and you try to do what's best for the conference, but also recognize that you're not the big dog in the room, unfortunately.
That's right.
And so you can try to get what you can get, but at the same time, you can't, I think the word you used, and I agree with you, you can't poke the bear too much because ultimately that will end up hurting things, you know, overall.
Yeah. And Sankey's right about this. Like, you have to be realistic.
I hate that he's right. I don't want to give him that kind of credit.
I don't want to give the SEC that kind of credit. The Big 12 will benefit from two AQs. There's still three at-large spots, right? Like, you know, in that format, there are still, they still guarantee us the group of five or group power six, whatever they want to call it, which is a necessity. Your conference champions are still getting in, which is a necessity. You get another team in. Again, last year, the Big 12 still would have only had one of 16. Now you're getting two guaranteed every year. And there are three automatic qualifiers. So if you have that year, which historically is very unlikely for the Big 12, if you had that year, you could still get more, but you get two guaranteed. I think that's a good
deal. And, you know, look, if I'm Brett Yormark and if I'm the ACC commissioner, if ultimately this is the direction that they go, I think that you settle for that and you say, okay, like we will agree to this.
I'm sure
in their minds, they're like, we want to get the exact same number of automatic qualifiers as the other two conferences. Never going to happen. But what I would do, what I would negotiate and what I would try to bargain for if I'm the Big 12 and the ACC is we will agree to this. We will sign to it, but we're not changing it. Like we need to lock this in for the next however many years, the next 10 years or whatever that is, because I could see the concern being it starts at four apiece for the SEC and the Big Ten, and then a year later, 2 years later, okay, we're going to need six apiece, then we're going to need eight apiece, and then ultimately everybody else gets pushed out of the door. And so I think you fight for that.
You do. And you fight to say, I want three, or I want two, and a guaranteed AQ comes from the Big 12 or ACC. One of the two, you know, they can massage that out, but the bottom line is the Big Ten and the SEC are probably getting four. So what else can you do? If you're that, you still try. It's a negotiation. And yeah, they get to do it public facing.
And now, digging deeper with the teams you follow, it's another Sports Daily Insider interview on KFH.
We are joined by our Royals insider, Jalen Thompson, beat reporter for the KC Star. You can find his work at, of course, the KC Star and at Jalen Thompson on X. All right, Jalen. Royals have lost four out of the last five series and started the Red Series off with a loss, in danger of losing now five of the last six series. I love to ask you, like, is it going to be a tight race in the American League? How concerned should we be here as the Royals continue to struggle as much as they have offensively?
I don't think that there should be a major concern, because you're seeing that the Royals are going to do whatever they can to get some offense and infuse some energy into that.
Not everything they can.
Yeah, yeah. With anything they can, except
call up their top prospect who
he's coming. He's coming. You got to give.
Well, I know he's coming, but that, like, I don't think it's fair. I get why they're waiting. I understand that they're waiting. They're making sure that they get his service time, but we can't say they're doing everything they can. If they were doing everything they can, they would call up Caglione.
Well, here's the thing. Let's play a hypothetical. So let's say they bring up Jack Caglione. Let's say he's up today. Let's say they bring him up. And you put him in that lineup. Do you really want to count him to be the savior right now? Do you really want to put pressure on him to be the savior, the guy that, has to come in and hit the home runs and lead the team in RBIs? And that's a lot to put on a young kid.
But why wouldn't you want him to come up and help? It's what he does. I'm not saying he has to go hit four hole, like, put him in the lineup somewhere. See if he can, if he acclimates the way he's acclimated this year to the other levels, then he's going to help you.
No, I am with you. I think that he can help right now, but you have to think about it too, from the perspective of last year, Jackson Holliday was the same way with the Orioles. He came up and he wasn't hitting as well. They had to send him back down. The Royals don't want to do that. They want to bring up Jack Caglione, and he's ready to go from day one. So, I mean, I get it. I know five home runs in his first week in AAA, it's incredible. But he's going to come. You just got to be patient.
I do think that in this argument, I understand the reasons for having Caglione, and I think that he could absolutely go and help. But he's not the savior where he's going to just absolutely transform the entire offensive output for this team. There are multiple issues up and down this lineup, and it continues. I mean, not only did they DFA Hunter Renfrow, and at least they've moved that problem out the door, which is good, but Michael Massey's not hitting. Jonathan India's not hitting. You know, there are several people up and down this lineup where, you know, yeah, Caglione can be a positive in the lineup, Jalen, but it's not like he's single-handedly going to transform this offense.
Yes, I think that's exactly where the Royals are coming from on that whole idea. They know that if you bring Jack Caglione up, he's going to hit the home runs. They know that. They know that he is going to be able to, you know, hit those two boxes of home runs, RBIs. But what about the other things? What about playing the outfield? Where's he going to play? You're going to play him in right field full time? How does that impact guys you just brought up in John Rave and Nick Lofton? Where are they going to be at? What's going to happen with Jonathan India? Where is he? Is he going to be a full-time DH if you bring up Jack Caglione now? And then how does that impact Salvi and Vinny when they need a day off? So it's a lot that goes into just the entire lineup when you bring up a guy like Jack Caglione. And I think that for right now, I think the Royals just need to focus on being able to score more runs consistently and win games. We got to remember, they still are 3 games over .500 right now, which is really impressive considering that they don't have their two starters, their ace starters, Cole Reagans and Seth Lugo, and then they don't have an offense that is scoring right now. So, I mean, that's a got to give them a lot of credit for where they are with their awards that they have right now.
They're fine, right? They're 3 games over .500. Don't misunderstand, but I got to tell you, no offense to Rave and Nick Lofton, man, I don't care. Look, and it would be one thing, like, if it wasn't so obvious what the team needs. The problem for me is the thing that he does and probably will do okay at the big league level is the thing they're desperate for. Last in the league in home runs, bottom five in slugging percentage. Right. Like the things that he does are the things that they need. They don't need somebody to come up and hit singles. They have lots of that. Right. They have lots of guys that can get on. They don't have anybody to drive in runs. You have a 22-year-old. He's not 19 years old. You have a 22-year-old. What's showing to be professional hitter with prodigious power, the thing that you lack so desperately. I am totally fine with the Royals keeping him down to make sure they don't lose a year of service time. If he were to win Rookie of the Year, all the little things that still are kind of floating out there, I'm fine with that for a small market team, but I'm not going to sit here and pretend like they're worried about that. They're not worried about that anymore. He's fine at the, in the minor. Dudes that are far less polished than him get called up all the time. Like, he'll be fine. I just think it's more about making sure they take care of him long-term organizationally. Again, I'm totally okay with that, and I don't even disagree with that. But I can't pretend like he doesn't help this team immediately and he doesn't fill a need, because he does. And I don't care if it costs Nick Lofton some games or whoever. Like, they've got it. They're in a wild card race right now.
No, I agree with you. I see your point, and I think that that's very valid. I also think, too, that if, let's say, this week comes up, he hits another 5 home runs. If he's sitting at 10 home runs at the end of this week alone, then I think, like, everything that the Royals have said, you got to knock down the door. You got to kick down the door. You got to prove that you can beat the level, and then they'll bring you up, right? That's their whole mantra, and that's how they decide who comes up, right? If he does that, I think you have to do it. You have to, because you can't have a guy that has 10 home runs in 10 games just sitting down in AAA. But I really think that what they want to do is see him have a handful of bats at AAA and really show that he's ready. And I think he is ready. I think if you ask me my personal opinion, I think you bring him up right now. I'm with everyone else. But I understand how the Royals operate. And sure, I know that They want to take it step by step. But at some point, like you said, Jacob, the talent is too hard to ignore, and you're going to have to make that decision.
And Tommy, I would say this too, because I think we would all agree. If in, well, I don't know how much, what's service time? 5, 6 years? 6 years from now?
Yeah.
if you polled a million fans, a million would tell you they'd rather have the extra year than have had him in 2025 called up 2 weeks early. I'm not saying I don't understand it or it's not the right decision. We all should acknowledge that he would absolutely help the team right now.
Well, and here's the other thing, too, is that the guy that presumably is blocking Jack Caglione at first base, Vinny Pasquantino, has hit the ball really well lately. He has turned things around, Jalen, you know, to the point to where he leads the team in home runs. He leads the team in RBIs. He's got his average up to almost 260 and an OPS over 700, which it wasn't that long ago when Vinny wasn't hitting. And there were a lot of concerns about, man, is something going on here to where they need to make a change potentially at first base. And all of a sudden, Vinny Pasquantino has become the hottest bat in the lineup.
Yes, you're right, Tommy. I think that Vinny is on a heater right now. He's been really doing well in May, and it's really great to, if you're a Royals fan, to see that out of him. Salvi is getting his swing back. He hit the home run last night. I think the key, though, will be you need those guys to produce with runners in scoring position. That's where they need to be at their best form. And there's still times where the Royals get a runner on base and they can't get them in. They cannot get them in. I mean, look at Sunday's game where you're in Minnesota. You're scratching and clawing, trying to get a run in. You get it from Freddie Fermin and Michael Garcia, but that game shouldn't have went to extra innings. You had Chris Bubich pitch the game of his life and pretty much, and you still almost lost that game. You should have won the first two games in Minnesota. You had Noah Cameron have a great game. You had another great game from Michael Wacha. So it's just like, what can you do as an offense? Can they score five runs a game? Can they do that? Then maybe the team will have more wins because your pitching staff is not giving up much.
Yeah, it's a problem. It's not a problem that's like they'll hit their way out of it. I don't think, I'm not saying it's not. They'll be. I still think they're going to be in a good position to make a wild card because they're such a good pitching team. But I don't know what else they can do other than let Vinny and Salvi hit. If they call up Cags, Salvi's just going to have to catch. And I'm at this point like whatever. I'm fine with it. But they got to score more runs. They scored four yesterday, but here's the other problem. It's almost like there's a psychology thing, Jalen. Mm-hmm. They got down 1-0, and I was joking with Tommy over the weekend. Like, that's insurmountable for this team. Like, you can't, like, the problem is psychologically yesterday, they get down 4-0 early, and you literally feel like they have absolutely no chance to win this game. It was the first inning because they just don't score runs consistently. How do you even break through that? That to me is the more pressing challenge. Like, how do you break through this? It has to be the weight of the world on them when they get in that situation when they're down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like yesterday's game, you get down early and you're like, they're not coming back. That's kind of how you felt. I mean, they're not coming. One swing from Salvador Perez, you got two runs on the board. The Reds gave you another run with the ball. And then you score one more. So really, you only manufactured three runs of your own against the Reds yesterday in that loss. But I always think back to the game against the Giants on last Wednesday, where they came out and they scored early and often. So they can do it. It's just they're polarizing. Sometimes they're good, sometimes they're not. And you can't be that way if you want to win a division. You have to be consistent. And I think that's the one thing that is, they know it. The Royals front office knows it. That's why they're trying John Rabe. That's why they're trying Nick Lofton. That's why you probably are going to see Jack Caglione be up here by, if he keeps hitting like he's hitting, probably by the end of next month. And that's why they're probably going to go out and get another bat in trade deadline or whatever they're going to do. They're going to fix this thing because that's what they've done the last 2 years. They needed starting pitching in 2023. They got Cole Reagans. They needed bullpen in 2024. You get Hunter Harvey and Lucas Ursaeg. They are going to fix it. The key is how long do you wait to fix it?
Well, tonight you've got the return of Brady Singer on the bump, of course, this time for the Reds, and Daniel Lynch throwing for the Royals. And, you know, the last time that Lynch started, it was a bullpen game. So we'll see how things, you know, pan out. It's going to be an interesting series, Jalen.
Yeah, it's going to be really fun to see Brady Singer tonight be on the bump against his old team. He joked, it's different trying to scout against Bobby Witt Jr. than, you know, be his teammate and play alongside him. I think that the key for the Royals is going to be, you know what Brady's going to want to do. Can you execute against him? That's the key.
All right, Jalen, we're right up against it. We appreciate it. We're going to talk again Friday and get the latest. Jalen Thompson, KC Star, we're coming back another hour of Sports Daily next.
From Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH. This is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Kester.
All right, welcome back in, everybody, to another hour of Sports Daily. Glad to be here with you. It's Albrock and Kester, Max Power producing, watching the NHL furiously for us as we are keeping an eye on the NBA in Oklahoma City, taking on Minnesota last night, getting a win. We will have Felix Johnson in later in this hour to chat, next segment, in fact, to chat a little NFL. I honestly, Tommy, it's kind of, for me, it's like, what have we missed lately? That doesn't happen very often with the NFL, and maybe we haven't missed anything, but like, what's been going on here? And if nothing else, we'll start to kind of dig into the Chiefs and, you know, positionally, and where do we think they can get better, or, you know, what could be the detriment of this team? So we'll talk to Felix next segment. You know, of course, this part of the world, the Chiefs are always on the mind. We talked a little Royals there with Jalen Thompson. If you missed any of that, you can go back and listen on the Odyssey app for free always, as we are in the middle of a playoff chase, Tommy, and we can digest that just a little bit here off the top. Look, I get it. I get waiting on Cags. I probably agree with waiting on Cags in all reality for the reasons they're, I think, honestly waiting on Cags. I just not going to sit here on this show and pretend it's because he needs more seasoning in AAA. That's not it at all. If you're protecting his service time, that's the correct decision. That's why you leave him down. I've got no problem with that. But he is not need more seasoning in AAA. I don't think that that's reality. I think he needs to be called up helping the big league team as soon as he reasonably can. I just want to be honest about everything that's happening here. He's 22 years old. Play call. He's not the same as Bobby Witt Jr. was. He's not the same as Jackson Holliday was. It's not the same situation. He played high-level college baseball and has torn the cover off the ball now at two different levels. It's time to call him up when they can make sure they protect his service time, but it's not because he's not ready.
Yeah. I don't think that that's an argument at all, whether or not he's ready. I think anybody who has watched him hit the cover off the baseball,
I mean, it's crazy,
in both AA and AAA, can tell you that he could absolutely go right now. I think it's important, regardless if he gets called up tomorrow, if he gets called up in 2 weeks, if he gets called up in 2 months, I think it's important to temper the expectations a little bit, not about individual ability or what he can do, because I think he can absolutely be a contributor and be productive at the plate. But I think we have to temper our expectations about what that actually does to the Royals lineup. And will that single-handedly change the fortunes of the offense by having Jack Caglione in the lineup? I think it can certainly help, but I don't think that it automatically turns the Royals' offense on its head and all of a sudden they're scoring 7 runs a game solely because Jack Caglione is in the lineup. I think that that needs to be out there too. Like, let's recognize that he's not the silver bullet that is going to come in and single-handedly change the way that this offense is producing runs, because there are multiple issues up and down the lineup. And can he help that? Absolutely. But he's not going to single-handedly transform that.
Well, and he helps it in the way they so desperately need it. That's the part for me. Like, what it's severely lacking is what he does. But he may strike out a little bit more than they're accustomed to, which could also in turn hurt you in some situations. I think that is important. All you're trying to do, like for me right now with the Royals, all you're trying to do, is get them to be just like a league average offense, right? Like, that's it. I think that's plenty for this team this year. I don't have any, you know, ideas of grandeur that they're going to be some top offense in baseball this year. That, I mean, unless they go make some trade, like, that's probably not going to happen. They just need to be better than what they are. And he will absolutely make them better than what they are. It's going to take some shuffling. The refusal to play him in the outfield or somebody in the outfield means Salvi has to catch more. So do you get a little less of Salvi in the lineup? Do you get a little less of Vinny in the lineup? There is a logjam there. And that's something, but they're not, it's not like they're trying to work that out in AAA, right? They're not playing him in the outfield. They're not doing any of this stuff that would alleviate that. So that logjam is going to exist whether they call him up tomorrow or a month from now. It doesn't really matter at this point. So they'll have to figure that out. And yes, I agree. Like, Vinny and Salvi hitting better is probably even more impactful than getting him called up in reality. And they both are. And they, you know, the Royals are, we're trying to get the consistency piece of their offense, but, you know, they scored 4 runs yesterday. They scored 4 runs in a game against Minnesota. Like, they're, you can kind of feel it coming a little bit. And we didn't have a chance to talk to Jalen Thompson about this specifically because we ran out of time. But, you know, eventually they're going to get Lugo and Reagans back, and we'll see. I think an interesting thing we need to watch is, we know Lorenzen is versatile. Do you keep Cameron in the rotation and let Lorenzen be an arm that helps you in sort of a Swiss Army knife role, which is what he came over to do last year, right? And they ended up needing him to be a starter, so he was a starter. This year they've ended up needing him to start the year as a starter, so he's been a starter. But he's got as much experience moving around as anybody in baseball. If Cameron keeps pitching like this, that's a decision also that could be highly impactful. Do you leave Cameron up and let Lorenzen become a you know, a long guy or a short guy when you need him, whatever you need?
Well, and let's be real too. In the game yesterday, the reason the Royals lost that game wasn't because the offense wasn't producing. It was because Michael Lorenzen gave up 6 runs. Early on in the game, right? In 11 hits in 5 innings, right?
He's been real hittable lately.
He didn't have a good outing. And, you know, so again, like, we can talk all day long about the deficiencies in the lineup, and that's absolutely a real thing and a true thing. And, you know, there are, again, situations with multiple batters. Like, Michael Massey is almost unplayable at this point. I'm glad that they have moved away from Hunter Renfroe. I'm glad that they've moved away from Kevin Biggio. You know, like, they've done some of these things to help alleviate that a little bit, but that's not why they lost the game yesterday. They got down in a big deficit early because Michael Lorenzen was hittable.
Way hittable. And he has been lately. What would you do? What would you do when you get your guys back? Because I think I'd leave Cameron in the rotation.
I would leave Cameron in the rotation too. And what I like about Lorenzen's ability is that because he's so versatile and he's a Swiss Army knife, you can use him as a spot starter. You can use him to spell a guy like Seth Lugo, who may need a start off every now and then.
You could go to a 6-man rotation.
You could, or you could leave him in, you know, in the bullpen. And then you've got like a Daniel Lynch, Michael Lorenzen first guy up type thing, where Lorenzen can be a spot starter, or he can go and work 2 or 3 innings in long relief for you and still be effective. I think that, like, that would be the way that I would want to utilize him, at least until we see, you know, does Noah Cameron come back down to earth at all, or does he continue to pitch at a very high level?
He'll come some down. He's not going to maintain this pace. But yes, I agree. And look, a 6-man rotation, while I typically don't like it, when Reagans and Lugo have already spent time on the shelf, and we know that every pitcher on the roster pushed innings limits last year, like pushed their threshold up, 2-3 weeks of a 6-man rotation would not be the worst thing in the world. Chris Bubich is transitioning back to a starter. Like, I don't hate that idea either, as much as I don't want to see Bubich not pitch every fifth day at this point. Protecting those guys, if you're not losing anything in the quality of starting pitching that you're getting, and right now, if you move to a 6-man, you would not be, then I think it's something worth considering too. I don't think that's a bad idea at all to do something like that, because they do have to protect these guys a little bit based on everything we talked about in the offseason. Like, they all pushed it as hard as they've ever pushed it. There could be, and the other thing I love about Lorenzo, I don't know how much you watched the Bubich start over the weekend. Dude, Lorenzen was fired up for that guy. Like, you can tell what his impact on that clubhouse is and everything else. So, yeah, I think, I don't know which I'd prefer, 6-man rotation or to the bullpen. You might have talked me into a 6-man rotation. I think that's probably a decent idea. Do it for 2-3 weeks. You know, stretch it out as much as you can so that you can push those other guys harder down the home stretch. Here's the other problem. Ursig struggled a little bit lately. Like, Lorenzen might be able to help you in, I mean, if he had to, in high leverage. Would you rather have Angel Zerpa or Michael Lorenzen up in a high leverage spot?
I mean, I don't think anybody would have predicted that at the end of May that the two top pitchers in your Royals rotation are Chris Bubich and Noah Cameron. But they are. And obviously, you've got Reagans and Lugo
for now, right.
on the IL.
Bubich is the best pitcher.
Bubich is an all-star. Like, he's pitching like an all-star. He's pitching like a Cy Young type guy. Like, he is out freaking standing right now.
Unreal. I mean, we all hoped it would go well, and we've seen flashes from him. This is crazy. And it, I mean, it. That, there's nothing. It's not all that different than what we saw from Reagans a year ago. Honestly, it looks very real. Like, it looks very much like this is a thing. Like, this isn't some, you know, flash in the pan or anything else. So, just digesting what Jalen Thompson had to say there about Jack Caglione, and then getting to the part we didn't really talk about with the Royals. They'll play again tonight. You'll hear them here against the Reds. Pregame coverage begins at 6:30 on KFH. So stay tuned for that. All right. Up next, we should have Felix Johnson. We'll get him in. We'll talk a little football when we return. It's hour number two of Sports Daily. Don't go away.
Okay, take it easy. We're going on the air.
This is Sports Daily on KFH. And now, digging deeper with the teams you follow, it's another Sports Daily Insider interview on KFH.
All right, welcome back, everybody, to Sports Daily. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster, joined by our Chiefs insider, Felix Johnson. If you're watching our video stream, sun's out, guns out for Felix here today. Look, you were going to trick the weather, right? We hadn't seen the sun in a little while. I get it, man. I'm ready.
Hey, it's chest and arm day. I got to get things rolling. I got to get things going today. We got to get things
all that
popping.
Leg day stuff, massively overrated. The older you get, you can skip leg day. Don't.
I just do it on Monday, so I don't have to do it later in the week. I don't have to look forward to it. So it's already done. I did it on Memorial Day.
There you go. It's a slow time, Felix, in the world of the NFL. If there is a slow time, it is right now, I think, because we're about to get camps. We're about to get all this stuff. We're post-draft. This is it. This is where you sort of take a step back and chill, right? Like, there's not a ton going on right now.
Yeah, like 20 teams started OTAs today, or will be starting them today. And then there were some teams that started last week if they had new head coaches. So you're exactly right. I mean, when the hard work actually begins for the players and the coaches and some of the executives, that's when it kind of stops for us, where there's not a ton of things to talk about until we start to figure out who's actually going to be playing on week one. But it is kind of an interesting time if you want to get ahead, if you want to figure out who's going to be your guys, your fantasy sleepers or whatever the case may be. If you want to get ahead, you might as well start in May instead of September.
What do we know about anything more about Aaron Rodgers? I know that he's still unsigned. We don't know if he's going to retire, if he's going to ultimately sign with the Steelers. What does your gut tell you on what he ends up doing?
You know, Aaron Rodgers, he has kind of gotten interesting in the last like week or last couple of days, because he's talking about maybe I'll go to Minnesota, pull the old Brett Favre thing, go to the Jets, then go to Minnesota. There's talk of him going back to the Packers as a backup. There's just a lot of weird things. I think Aaron Rodgers just wants to stay around. I think he just realized that there's not a ton of other things other than football for him to do. And that sounds like it's like a really sad case, but that is the case for a lot of football players, especially for the case of like guy like Aaron Rodgers. He's won four MVPs. Of course, this has been his life's calling, and he is into all that weird stuff, whatever else he's into. He realizes that football is obviously more rewarding, and that's what he's been doing. And so that's what I realize. That's what I'm starting to think things are going on with. I think he doesn't want to go to the Pittsburgh Steelers because they haven't figured out an offense outside of Terry Bradshaw and Ben Roethlisberger in their entire history. So I think that he's kind of shying away from that, unless there is something like with the DK Metcalf part of it. If they would have kept George Pickens, I would have believed it a little bit more. To me, it's just go ahead and retire. The only thing Aaron Rodgers can do is win a Super Bowl to emphasize his legacy.
Yeah.
He's not going to do that if he's the Vikings starter, at least. He's not going to do that if he's the Steelers starter. He's not going to do that as the Packers backup. So, frankly, retire. Like, I mean, that sounds as simple, like we said, like that's his entire life has been devoted to football. And now I'm just saying give it away. But that's the only option that is plausible right now.
Yeah, I agree. Who cares at this point if you're mm-hmm. Rodgers? You're not. I've said that forever. Like, are you really going to win a Super Bowl with Aaron Rodgers? Like mm-hmm. on both sides?
Not as your starter.
Why the Steelers hold out for this? No, I mean they're not going to. But then they go trade for DK Metcalf. It's like, well, all right.
It's Pittsburgh. They love receivers, hate quarterbacks.
But they don't love trading for. They love drafting them because they do it so well. It's just it's wild to me. I want to, like, through these next couple of weeks, we're gonna have time for this. When we look at the Chiefs next year, what do you think if they're like last year? It was very obvious what the Achilles heel was, right? It was left tackle. It was the protection of Patrick Mahomes. They have done a lot to try and address that. If there was one, is it still that? Does this team have a glaring Achilles heel right now as we look at this and try to get predictive with what the Chiefs might do next year?
I think so. Obviously, because Jalen Moore has not really ever been a starter in the NFL backing up Trent Williams. But if you're backing up the best left tackle in the world, fine. Same thing, we know the Kingsley Suamataia situation. If he's replacing Joe Tooney, is he going to be a valuable replacement for an all-pro guy? Probably not, just because Joe Tooney is one of the best guards in the league. And then if Josh Simmons, if he is the starter week one, is his knee healthy? So there's three answers to a lot of the questions that we're asking, but still there's questions along with that. That's just kind of how football goes. Guys are going to get hurt. The defense is going to give up a touchdown. Like, things aren't going to go well. The Chiefs are going to lose a game, two, three, maybe four this upcoming year, because that's just how football works out. And it's going to be because of Josh Simmons is a rookie left tackle, or something else didn't go one way or another because we thought that was going to be improved. And honestly, I think that the Chiefs are going to, if you want to beat them, you're going to have to look at the Super Bowl. And the Chiefs know that too. So they're kind of moving in that direction of how do we stop that? We got to get the left tackle like we're talking about. So I think that there are not easy solutions, but Creed Humphrey is the best center in football. He's going to have a big, big hand in fixing the protection issues. And hopefully this offseason, they're having a big overhaul on whatever the issues were. So I believe that some of those problems will get solved. But like you're saying, the Chiefs are going to lose games this year. And it probably will be because pressure got to Mahomes, because that's how you beat teams in today's NFL. You pressure the quarterback.
I didn't realize this, Felix, until I read the article on Arrowhead Addict this morning, that the Chiefs have all of their draft picks signed except for Omar Norman Lott, their second round pick. They have not signed him yet. It sounds like there might be a little bit of a contentious contract negotiation, just kind of based on what other second round draft picks are now getting from teams in the NFL. Are you concerned about that? I mean, do you think that there is potentially an issue here that the Chiefs may not get their second round pick signed?
I think yes and no in that we talked a lot about it leading up to the fact that, like, drafting an interior defensive lineman is kind of a luxury item at this point. If you have Chris Jones and you just kind of need an ancillary option, another guy that can just be the second defensive tackle. And if Omar Norman Lott can fit into that role, that'll be awesome. And if he's late to camp, that's really worrying because he is a rookie. This is his first year in the NFL. But I think it just – think about it from his perspective, it just kind of behooves him to be at camp. You're learning under a great defensive line coach, and then you have Chris Jones to learn under. It's the Kansas City Chiefs, for the love of God. So it kind of behooves you just sign the deal. Like, it's the Kansas City Chiefs. Sure, you're going to have to take a bit of a discount. You got drafted into the NFL, so it's like all your dreams came true. But I think the deal gets done. Things will work itself out. It's one of those weird things where, like, I feel like the rookie contract negotiations always feel like they're a bigger deal than they actually are because they're rookie contract negotiations.
He's an older player too. That could he's 23. That could have something to do with it. That has been, and that also points us to the other place. I think if you were looking at something that the Chiefs could easily still be lacking next year, it'd be a pass rush. You know, they need him. They need him for that reason. Maybe he knows that. Maybe he's savvy to that. Like, they, Chris Jones is a Hall of Famer. George Karlaftis is pretty good. I think sometimes he gets a little overrated. No offense to him. I think it's because they're so desperate to the pass rush. But, you know, the numbers are not he's not. He's a pretty good NFL pass rusher.
Yeah.
They need more of that. And so is that another area where we could look at this team as something that really hurts them? Or, like the last 2 years, do we just say Spags is really good at what he does? They'll be just fine.
Well, and I think that's part of the equation, too, where belief in the secondary is going to be as good as it can be. You're going to get a ton of coverage sacks because all of those guys have been, they're not only are they young, they're in contract years like we've talked about. Yep. They have basically only played in Super Bowls in their entire career. So this has been that defense effectively. So kind of just carrying that over. The only thing that can make the Chiefs defense even better would be the pass rush. And so, like what you're saying, they drafted Jalai out of Louisville. They go and get Omar Norman Lott, assuming the deal is everything gets taken care of. Have Chris Jones. George Karlaftis is expected to take that next step. He's also in a contract year. So I think you're absolutely right. They have basically everything you would want. It's kind of like on offense where you have the quarterback and some of the receiving pieces, and you like your running back and play caller. Just need a left tackle. With on your defense, you just need your pass rush to be a little bit stronger. And even then, you've got Chris Jones on offense. You got Josh Simmons and a believer. You believe that he's going to be some people believe that he has the potential to be that franchise cornerstone.
Well, on a different note, Felix, we haven't had you in since the NFL had that whole contentious debate about the tush push, and ultimately that failed at the owners' meetings. Where do you land on that? I mean, do you think that was the right decision? Were you surprised that they weren't able to get the tush push banned?
Well, I think we have to be okay with the Frankie Louvu play now. Like, it's one of those things where there's only one team who has fully mastered it, and it's the Philadelphia Eagles. Now, we saw in the AFC Championship game, Josh Allen, and he's done it. I think it was a Monday night game with the Tennessee Titans. He's been doing effective. They've been running a quarterback sneak, and he's been screwing it up for years now because he false steps. And as an offensive lineman, the first step you take is forward. And Josh Allen at 6'6", 250 pounds, constantly takes his first step backwards and then moves forward. And it's always to the left or to the right. I can't remember exactly which way it goes. And so the Eagles are the only one that consistently do exactly what they planned on doing with it. And so I think that kind of played into it. Whereas, like, until there's somebody else who can master this, whether it's they have a guy like Jalen Hurts who can weasel himself in there like he does, they have an offensive line like we do, which is incredibly hard to master, and you got to have a Jason Kelce to mentor all these guys, and then it works out this year that you won the Super Bowl, and now people feel like they want to ban it even more because of that. So I think that the Eagles are this unique case of, yeah, no, we're the only ones that can do it, and you guys are just angry because we won the Super Bowl. But at the same time, you have to be okay with the Frankie Louvu play because that's the only way you truly stop it, and then we'll have to cross that river when we get there.
Here's what I think will happen. You're going to see specialty players do this thing. It doesn't have to be the quarterback. Not everybody has Jalen Hurts, but Seattle, for instance, doesn't have to do it with Sam Darnold. They just drafted Jalen Milroe. You know, Josh Allen's a big dude. He can handle it. There are tight ends and fullbacks. Like, you're going to see specialty players, I think, do this. And so I don't know if it's this year, but I'll bet you in 2 or 3 years, if the rule stays around, every single team in the NFL will do the tush push. And this is why I think they should have banned it, because I think it's a boring play. Mm-hmm. And we're going to start seeing everybody do it all the time.
Right.
But right now, they're going to leave it there. And so, I mean, you're crazy if you don't do it. Like the Chiefs right now, if they don't go into next season with some version of the tush push, they're not doing it right. Learn how to do it. It's unstoppable when you do it correctly.
Well, and I even think Kansas City does have a version of it when they were motioning around the tight ends. Noah Gray sneaks under, or Travis Kelce sneaks under. So it's going to be, like you're saying, specialty players or your tight end who used to be a quarterback in junior college or whatever the case, your wide receiver who used to be a quarterback. So different things like that. I think you're absolutely right, because it's a copycat league. But what can you do to kind of twist whatever – the number one thing is in the NFL, and if it can be with motions or we're going to see passes off of it. We've seen Philadelphia do it. It's just that there's only one team that has mastered this one play, and until you master that one play, you can't really break anything off of it, and we just haven't seen anybody master the one play and do anything else off of it to make it more entertaining, like what you're talking about.
Yeah, I will see. I mean, it'll take time. I don't know if it's this year, because teams didn't know, but they have enough time.
Yeah.
Now, from a strategic standpoint, go learn how to do it. The Chiefs should have been doing this with Blake Bell forever. But go learn how to do it, because it's a huge advantage. And even if you're not 90% where the Eagles are, if you're 75%, why wouldn't you do this? And so I think we're going to see more of it this year than ever before. Felix, what do you guys have going there at Arrowhead Addict? What are you working on this week?
I should have something coming out this week talking about the new Protector of the Year award, going through the AFC West. Each team's number one candidate. We'll be having a new episode of the Let's Talk Ball podcast talking offensive trends in the NFL. So, yeah, that's what I got cooking this week.
We're looking forward to it. You can find all of Felix's work there. You can follow him on social media. Just look for Felix R. Johnson there. Felix, we appreciate it. We'll do this again next week. We'll just keep digesting and we'll have OTA stuff to talk about, right? We'll be in that mode next
week. Roger Goodell will have something for us.
Yeah, he'll cook something up. maybe we'll get some Aaron Rodgers news. We're going to have Aaron Rodgers and Kirk Cousins in a boxing match to decide who gets to be the quarterback of the Steelers next year.
No, the loser has to be
the quarterback. The winner gets to retire, and the loser has to go be the quarterback of the Steelers.
The loser has to go play for the Saints. That's what the loser has to go
and do. Yeah. Aaron would be pissed about that. I don't want to live in Louisiana.
Now we're talking. All right, Felix, be good. There goes Felix Johnson. Who would you rather have, Tommy? Would you rather have Kirk Cousins or Aaron Rodgers?
I'd rather have Kirk Cousins.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, I don't
just
think... Just
because of the baggage.
I'm not an Aaron Rodgers guy. I've never been an Aaron Rodgers guy. He annoys the crap out of me. And I just think Kirk Cousins is a good guy. And he might not be, you know, his ceiling at this point in his career is a lot lower, I think. But... when you add in the baggage that Aaron Rodgers has, I would take Kirk Cousins any day of the week.
Yep. The elephant in the room on that for me is that injury takes more than just a year to get back from. And now Cousins is in that threshold. I think there's a decent chance that Cousins has some left in the tank and is better than he was a year ago, just because he's now had more time with that injury. I think there's as much a good chance as that as you can get Aaron Rodgers in there and not deal with all the crap that he's going to bring. You know what I mean?
Neither quarterback is going to win you a Super Bowl. Like, that's not going to happen with either one of them, I don't think. And so, at that point, it's kind of a wash. I think you have to make the decision, first off, what's more financially responsible between those two players? And then number two,
Cousins is expensive.
And then also number two, what is the headache that you're going to get with either one of those guys?
I don't think you're going to get a headache with Kirk Cousins. I mean, Kirk Cousins didn't give you a headache when he stepped aside for a rookie last year. So it's not that.
And
I
he
just,
wasn't
like,
happy
of,
about it. He wasn't happy when they drafted Michael Penix.
Why would he be happy?
But he didn't throw a big fit. He didn't disrupt things. He didn't,
I'm sure he was helpful in practice.
I'm sure he was. And Rodgers in the same kind of situation, I don't think you can say the same thing.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it was weird with Rodgers because there was never, Favre was reportedly an ass to Rodgers, right? Like, that was reported. I don't think that was it. I don't want to be unfair to Rodgers. I don't think that it was ever, implied that he was a bad teammate to Love. So, I don't know that he's going to come in and be disruptive that way. It's just like, once you get him in there, he's fine. But you still got to get him in there and go through all of that stuff that, and then deal with when he tries to play these mind games with the media to motivate people in his weird way, and never really works because nobody's brain ticks like his. We're not relatable.
And speaking of that, I mean, I don't know if you saw the headline over the weekend that Danica Patrick was asked about her relationship with Aaron Rodgers when they were together.
Oh, is that a thing?
not anymore. They dated years ago, right. For a long time. And she called him emotionally abusive in their relationship, which, I mean, that's
surprising. He's emotionally abusive.
Doesn't surprise me at all. I mean, just the fact that in the way that he operates, I read that quote from Danica Patrick and I'm like, I could totally see that. I'm not surprised about that whatsoever.
There's sometimes I feel like you're emotionally abusive to me.
You're always emotionally abusive to me.
That's like the headline of this show.
We're just emotionally abusive to each other. That's
How would you describe Sports Daily? I don't know. Emotionally abusive to anybody standing in the way, like anybody and everybody. We're all, you know, as long as we're all emotionally abusive, right? It's like a happy marriage. You just have to be able to give and take. And that's what we do here on Sports Daily. Tommy, since the last time we talked, we added a cat to the family repertoire. If you hear a little squeak here, it's because I'm trying to deal with that. But, you know, all things, we're all smooth here. I was a little leery of this. You know, we lost our family cat in October. He was like the perfect cat. I was like, all right, kids, that's it. And then, you know, famous last words, you get a few months of your kids saying their little literal prayers at night and hoping for a new cat. And eventually you break and it's like, all right, fine. So we have a cat now, a kitten. He's like a pound. He's very, very nice. Went out to some nice, a very sweet family out on a farm in Hamilton, Kansas to get him. And now we have a cat again.
So, congratulations are in order. How does your dog feel about this cat?
She's a little scared of it, I think. Mm. I can't tell. Our dog is, she's 12 years old. Part of the reason I also justified it was to get our dog a cat, right? She lost her cat and now we got her another cat. But she's, they're warming up a little bit. She is either scared of it or scared that it's going to hurt us. And I can't decide. I mean, it's one of those funny things. I'm pretty sure the, you know, 35 pound dog is scared of the 1 pound kitten. But right now it's just like, they're cool, just sort of ignoring each other, but she has to bark at him a little bit just to, like, you know, let me know that, you know, there's a thing over there, like, and I'm not sure what I think about that thing, so I'm gonna bark at you here. But it's going good. Like, they'll be pals soon. Nobody's hurt each other or anything yet, but it'll be fine. Kids are over the moon, of course. You should get one. You should get a cat. I know you're a big cat guy.
Yeah, no, I'm good. I will pass on that. My wife is allergic to cats, and I hate cats. And so just those two things combined, we're never going to get a cat.
I like dogs versus cats. I'm definitely a dog person. I have no problem with cats. Grew up in the country. We had cats out at the barn. Like, they were fine. They'd come say hi. You might play with them a little bit. No issue with cats. So I'm not only a dog person. I like most animals. So I'd never, though, been anywhere near an inside cat before I met my wife. And we had that cat. And that cat was just right. Like, he was like my speed. I love that cat. And I'm like, I don't know that we can ever replicate that. So I'd been fine never having another cat. My kids, on the other hand, a different story. So now we have a cat. And I'm good. Like, he seems great. Like, he'll be fine. I don't think he's going to be destructive or anything like that. So it'll be fine. You can come play with them anytime you want, Tommy. I know you can't have one at home because your wife's allergic. So
yeah, I will pass. I've had too many bad cat experiences.
Yeah, no, I get it. I know a lot of people have. Luckily, I've never had one. So I don't, again, I don't, I'm not pro or anti cat. I liked the cat that we had. I like if a cat's outside, I'll pet it and like play with whatever. But no, I'm a dog person, but I got my dog a cat. That's what I keep telling everybody. I got the dog a friend. All right, let's talk about this PJ Haggerty signing. I know people don't love the player. So, like Rick, when we brought this up earlier, it was like, he's a ball dominant guard. I get it. Jerome Tang needs a ball dominant guard though. So to me, I always thought I was like, he's going to go to Houston. Right. They played that way last year. They have a need for it. This dude's totally going to Houston. That's what I kind of thought would happen. But Tang does a lot of that offensively. Right. The thing that K-State didn't do well last year that Houston did very well. Like, if you watched Houston, they were totally fine with the ball dominant guards taking all the shots. And then, though, making sure they were the best rebounding team and following that up with easy possessions, which is something K-State must get better at. And they've You know, they've begun to do some of those things a little bit, I think, with the roster. I don't know how this fits because I think they now have probably two or three ball dominant players. But it's hard to ignore getting a player like PJ Haggerty. It immediately, Tommy, as I looked at the 24/7 rankings on these things, because they're so hard to track, it catapults K-State to the number four transfer ranking across all of college basketball. They have now the fourth ranked incoming transfer portal class. So I think that's meaningful. KU is the other part of this because they haven't really done anything. We talked last week. They lost out on the player we all had them pegged for. They're all the way down at 41. Now, this obviously doesn't include retaining players or bringing in freshmen like KU did both of those things. So it's, you know, we're not looking at like, oh, look at K-State. But it does bring up a point to me, like K-State lands this big fish. KU didn't get theirs. What does KU do here? Because they still do need a dude, like, or two even. How much room do they even have to make here as K-State makes this splash and on paper, everything looks great and fine. And I know it's on paper and who cares, but on paper, it's better than not on paper.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think that the second part of your question, first off, with Kansas, I mean, I think that they absolutely have, you know, holes to fill in that roster. They've got three scholarship spots available right now, and you've got players, and PJ Haggerty is one of them who is withdrawing from the NBA draft. There are going to be other players that are going to be withdrawing from the NBA draft and are going to be looking for a place to go. That's where Kansas is going to look moving forward. But as it pertains to Kansas State, I mean, what I find really interesting about this is that it really, this offseason has not gone the way that PJ Haggerty, I think, wanted it to go. I can't imagine that going into this offseason, he thought that, his ideal landing spot was going and playing at Kansas State. I mean, he was looking, and this is according to reports from Matt Norlander, he was originally looking for an NIL deal in the range of $4 to $5 million. He didn't get that from Kansas State. It's smaller than that. He didn't get that from any school. So $4 to $5 million, that didn't happen. Then he went into the NBA draft, didn't get the feedback that he wanted. So now he's going back to college. This offseason has not gone the way that PJ Haggerty has wanted it to go, but there is an opportunity now, I think, for Haggerty to perform at a high level at Kansas State, improve his draft stock, and be a large contributor in the Big 12 for an opportunity for next year to enter the draft. And maybe, I don't know if he's projected, you know, if he could improve his draft stock all the way to be a lottery pick, but I certainly think that he could improve his draft stock quite a bit this season if he performs at a high level for K-State.
I agree. I mean, look, he has backed it up now 2 years in two different places with a, we'll call it an elevated competition level, although it was the same league, you know, from Tulsa to Memphis. He has been a high percentage shooter. I think there's a reputation that he does come in and take 20 shots. He shoots almost 50%. So like he does that with the one thing he doesn't, and this is probably what hurts him in the NBA, is he doesn't shoot a lot of threes. So, right, like it to me, it's very obvious. Like, what can he do to elevate and take it to the next step? And that's become a better three-point shooter. And we see guys do that, right? Like, we see guys elevate, especially once they get to the league. So go work on it now. Look at Fred VanVleet. He's made that such a big part of his NBA game. Haggerty, a guy like Haggerty, who is a lot like Fred VanVleet, right? Smaller. A good scorer gets to the free throw line, which Haggerty does. All these skills that could translate to the NBA. What did Fred do to really take his career off? He learned how to, he shoots a ton of threes, right? He learned how to be a really good three-point shooter. Haggerty, that's what he needs to do. And if he does that, you know, and it doesn't have to be like he needs to go shoot eight threes a game. What did he shoot last year? He shot like, yeah, he was one of three basically per game last year. Can that be two of five? You know, like, I think that's reasonable. I think it could be. And I think if he can do that, that's going to be what elevates his draft stock. I think the league probably likes the fact that he can get to the rim and score that way. I think the league probably likes that he's experienced at getting himself. Look at Shai Gilgeous-Alexander right now. He's not a three-point shooter. He gets to the line, right? Like, there you go. If you want to know, like, what could PJ Haggerty strive for, it's to be SGA. And that would help K-State if he can do it.
Well, and I think the other thing too with what Haggerty does well is it's what the Wildcats, I think, were lacking on their roster. And of course, you're going to get, you're always going to want a guy that can score at a high clip, but they didn't really have any kind of scoring first guy on their roster. I mean, and I think that that's going to be important going into this season, because I was wondering, while they were able to get, you know, additions to their team, and they've been able to add size and length, and they've been able to get, you know, experience and that sort of thing in the portal. I think one of the questions, had they not landed Haggerty, would have been, where are they going to get scoring? How are they going to be able to get points? And I think that question, by and large, has now been answered with PJ Haggerty, because while he may be ball dominant, while he may be score first and all of that, that's one area that Kansas State really needed to address. And they got the nation's third leading scorer a year ago.
We didn't, at least I didn't. Like, I just didn't have him on the radar for them. It's a perfect fit. I don't know if it's a perfect fit with the other players they've brought in, but it's a perfect fit stylistically. It's a perfect fit for Jerome Tang and what we've seen him succeed with. It's a perfect fit seemingly to what the team needs. I didn't know they were going to be in the mix for him. I think he's smart for going to K-State. I think like there is a level of, yeah, if you're not going to go make the money you're trying to make, go to the place that can help you get to that point. And I think K-State's absolutely that place. I think it's a great fit. I love it. Perfect. Picture perfect for K-State and for Haggerty. So I'm all in on that. I think it's great. Does it all fit together? That's the part we don't know, and we're not going to know, and we can't know. We have no idea if these pieces are going to fit together anywhere, right? Like it's impossible to guess at that. That's what makes this so difficult. But on paper, Haggerty to Jerome Tang's offense and Kate, like it's great. It makes a ton of sense. Now to the other part of it. For KU, and these two things aren't related. We just watch them at the same time as KU sits with the, according to 24/7, eighth best transfer portal class ranking in the conference, not in the country, in the conference. Will KU have enough without a big splash? I do think, Tommy, it's something worth watching, right? Like it's something we have to pay attention to as we look at, you know, is basically at this point, do they have enough growth internally, and are Darren Peterson and Flory Badunga enough star power to be the headline guys for this team as the other guys you hope become the role players? I mean, they can. It's a big ask, though. I think it's a pretty big ask if we're being realistic with it. And I think that the reinforcements, I don't know where they are, but they got to get something in there.
Yeah, I don't think that they're done. I mean, knowing that they've got the open holes in their roster with scholarships and all of that, and then there are going to be more guys presumably that are going to leave the NBA draft process. That's where Bill Self is going to look. I don't think that they're done.
I don't either, and they don't have to be, and they also don't. I mean, it's not like KU didn't need Haggerty. At one point, we thought that might be a good fit, and then it just didn't. It didn't make a lot of sense. But Shaq Moore came back too. I didn't even realize that. So we'll see. But good for K-State. That's a good one. That's a big one, and it gives them a little star power going in.
All right, that's going to wrap things up for us today on a Tuesday here on Sports Daily. Rich Eisen follows us at 11, Jim Rome at 2, JR Sport Greek at 5, and then the Royals continue their home series against the Reds in Kansas City. Pregame coverage at 6:30 right here on KFH. Tomorrow on the program, we'll get more into the Royals and their series with the Reds and what they need to do offensively. We'll talk more about college hoops and give you an update on anything new going on with the college football playoff. That and a bunch more coming up on a Wednesday edition of Sports Daily. For Max Power and Jacob Albrock, I'm Tommy Caster. We'll see you then.
I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. I mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.